Welcome to Living Above the Drama. I'm your host, Dr. Georgiana Donadio. We have all heard and probably have all said to someone, well, you may be really smart, but you're no brain surgeon. Brain surgeons hold the highest status in medicine because of the skills, the education, and the courage required to do the awe-inspiring work of manually opening and repairing a human brain. Yet all things are relative. My guest today has a wife of 25 years who says to him, when it comes to everyday tasks, you may be a brain surgeon, but you're no rocket scientist. Dr. Mark McLaughlin is a neuroscientist, brain surgeon, father of four children, and a youth wrestling coach. He shares that while he operates every day on the human brain, as a youth coach, every day he operates on the mind of his young athletes. These two dynamics of surgery and coaching are indispensable for Dr. Mark. He has trained his mind to deal with stress and make big decisions with limited time, just as he now trains his young athletes to do. Dr. McLaughlin's upcoming book, Outthinking Fear, A Neurosurgeon's Secrets to Making Life's Tough Decisions, shares the step-by-step details of how he has learned to successfully engage with stress and find deeper meaning in his life. He uses this approach in his medical practice, his coaching, and in all aspects of his life. Dr. Mark McLaughlin, who is not a rocket scientist, it is my pleasure to welcome you to Living Above the Drama. Thank you so much for joining us.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Oh, absolutely. I had such a good time talking with you on the pre-interview. And, you know, please tell your wife, that is so cute. I can only imagine. There was this story about Robert Redford. And Robert Redford, of course, was this huge star, you know. And his family had a chant that they would say to him, you know, like if, you know, there was much too much attention about his stardom to kind of remind him, you may be a movie star, but. So I imagine that goes on a little bit. And isn't that wonderful? Kind of keeps you grounded, huh?
Yes, she keeps me in check, that's for sure.
For sure. I think I remember in my days, my rotation days, and when I was in my training, the brain surgeon was like, wow, that was the pinnacle. That was the apex of medical training. And what's so exciting about your story is that you have experienced the incredible stress, training, education, pressure, all of the things that go into becoming a brain surgeon, and you've come out of it not only the better, but you've come out of it with skills and information and tools to really help other people, including your young athletes, to deal with the day-to-day stresses that we all live with. Do you want to tell us a bit of your story about how you decided to go into this field and how it was that you realized stress was something you needed to kind of master a bit?
Sure, sure. Well, I always knew I wanted to be a doctor, even when I was a little boy. I used to follow my grandfather around on hospital rounds. I used to carry his black bag. So it was something that I always knew I wanted to go into. But I really didn't get interested in neurosurgery until I was in medical school and I saw the way the different specialties worked. And, you know, I was a wrestler and I always liked taking on big challenges. And I kind of thought neurosurgery was the wrestling of medicine. It was the most grueling. It was the most, the knowledge base that was required for this specialty was very high. And so it demanded both physical and mental toughness, which excited me. And then when I got into it, oh my gosh, the first couple of years, you just realized this is impossible. Nobody can ever master this and be good at this specialty. And, you know, I think every resident goes through that experience. And then you finish your residency and you say, wow, I'm trained and I'm safe, but I don't know enough. And so it's a constant battle with mastery of the subject. And it's a constant battle with fear, because every day fear walks in on my doorstep and throws me a challenge that I have to deal with. So that's really along the way. I found these little tricks and rules and secrets of neurosurgery that helped me. They've been passed on to me from other generations of neurosurgeons. And I found that these tricks have really helped me through neurosurgery, but also through parenthood and being a spouse and business and in life.
Right. And you were talking about how the book that is coming out, by the way, Scribner is the publisher, and it will be coming out towards the end of this year. It'll be published in October. And the book is about those tricks, those rules of neurosurgery, and some of the wonderful things that you have learned, not only about the surgery, but you also shared with me you've had some pretty, I guess, reasonably distressing situations with patients on the table, I can only imagine. And, you know, holding a person's life in their hands, their brain in their in your hands, must bring up, as you had described, the need to be able to think on your feet, to be able to make very fast decisions and hopefully the right decisions. And we both know that in wrestling, my son was a wrestler, as we shared, a very high-level wrestler, and we know that making those fast decisions and responding very quickly, it's easy to see the correlation between that sport and a life and death decision. Can you share with us, like, what some of the really, you know, traumatic moments on the table with your patients might have brought you the most wisdom? I mean, did you have some real touch and go things where you had to think fast and one of these guidelines or one of these steps or rules popped up for you?
Sure. I mean, I've had many epiphanies along the way. The first one was my first day exposed to neurosurgery at the University of Pittsburgh, when I was a visiting student there, and I was watching a gentleman who turned out to be one of my mentors and one of the greatest influences on my neurosurgery career. I was watching Dr. Peter Janetta operate on someone's brainstem, and it was really an amazing experience. I was a third-year medical student, and he was working through about a 50-cent piece size hole in someone's skull, and he was working down right on the brainstem under a microscope. And I was nervous. I was nervous just watching him. And just as he was about to move the blood vessel away from the nerve that was causing this patient's pain, he did something that astonished me. He began to hum. He was humming and perfectly, perfectly relaxed. And I couldn't believe that. And as he moved the blood vessel with these sharp micro scissors right next to this nerve that's the consistency of a overcooked piece of spaghetti that could tear at any time, he said, Mark, never cut what you can't see. Never cut what you can't see in neurosurgery. And that has become a metaphor for my entire career. I'll never forget that, because what I realized was that he reduced a highly complex operation to a very basic rule that he followed every single time during microdissection. And that is, you better be darn sure when you close those scissors, what's in the mouth of those scissors. And that was a great, great lesson for me that I carry with me today. And really on a larger scale, what that really means philosophically is, whenever we're making a decision, whenever we're making a big move in our life, make sure that we know exactly what's in front of us and exactly what the consequences of that decision is.
Yes, and I think so much of that wisdom, what are the consequences of the choices and the actions? So much of that is getting lost, I think, you know, in training or in how we're working, especially in medicine. I mean, removing ourselves from the neurosurgery field, I'm sure you're aware of all the kind of Wild West stuff that's going on out there. And I think that the rules in your book are so important. They should be part of not only all neurosurgery, but really part of all approaches to medicine and approaches to life. Talk to us about your young wrestlers, I know you were a wrestler, and how did you get into youth wrestling coaching? And talk to us about, again, the crossover between those two disciplines.
Sure. Well, you know, I wrestled in high school and college and at the College of William and Mary, And when I had young boys, I wanted to help them along and teach them what I had learned. So I got involved in the Princeton Youth Wrestling Program. And along the way, I just found that, you know, I had a knack for it. I really loved helping the kids, and I loved kind of passing on the wisdom that I had, not just as a wrestler, but as a doctor and as a parent to these kids. And I found the more and more I coached that the more and more these rules of neurosurgery applied to wrestling, and they applied to everything.
Right.
So another rule that one of my chief residents taught me was, it's never too late to do the right thing. No matter what the situation is, if things are going wrong, if you know what the right thing is to do, do it as quickly and as soon as you can. And more likely than not, you're going to have a better outcome. Or if it's going to be a bad outcome, it's going to be a less severe outcome than what you would have expected. And one story I love to tell about my young wrestlers is, I had this young boy who was out on the mat wrestling another young boy, his weight, but this opponent was incredibly stronger and better athlete than the boy that I was coaching. And after two periods of really getting pushed around on the mat and having his face ground in the mat, and this my wrestler's parents in the stands watching this, it's a very emotional sport, wrestling, you know, as a parent of a
yeah.
wrestler.
Yeah.
It's tough to watch your kid getting physically, pushed around on the mat and being dominated. At the end of two periods, I called an injury timeout, and I brought this boy over to the corner, and I looked him in the eyes, and I said to him, I said, "Listen, I got some bad news for you, Devin. You're not going to win this match." And he was already about to cry, and this almost pushed him over the edge. And I said, "Wait a minute, though. Hold on. Listen to me, okay? You're not going to win this match. This kid's better than you. He's stronger than you. It's okay. It's okay. All I want you to do in this third period is score 1 point. I want you to use every move that we've taught you while you're on the bottom position, and you hit every single move you possibly can, and all I want you to do is get 1 point. You get 1 point, we will have a success." And so we got him put back together. We kind of got his pride back in order, and he took bottom. And after 57 seconds of trying every single move that we had taught him, the top wrestler locked his hands illegally, and the ref stopped the match and awarded our wrestler 1 point. And I looked at this boy and I said, "You just scored 1 point, and you've got 3 seconds left. Score another." And in 3 seconds, this kid hit a stand up, got another point, and you would have thought he won the Olympics. It was such a great experience. And his parents were in the stands, and this boy had a victory. We took something that was bad and we turned it into something that was good. And I said to him when he walked up the mat, I said, "Devin, you're going to remember this moment for the rest of your life." And I will too, because you took something bad and you made it good. And it was really a moving experience for both of us.
What a wonderful story.
Never too late to do the right thing.
Wow. You know, I'm sure there are many listeners who do not know a lot about wrestling or have never had the experience. I think wrestling is a metaphor. It's a metaphor for what we all go through in life. It represents everything. It represents hopes, dreams, training, ambition, wins, losses, disappointments, injuries, overcoming. Oh, I mean, you could just go on and on about wrestling. That is a wonderful story, and I can hear and I can remember from the emotion in your voice, moments with our son who had all of the good, bad, and the ugly in his wrestling career. And it's so great that you were able to provide that, not only for that boy, I'm sure the whole team, that was a tremendous experience for them. The parents, of course, that was a wonderful opportunity for them and for yourself. I mean, when we overcome, when we're able to achieve against all odds, isn't that the best underdog story? And you said something during the pre-interview about it's never too late to do the right thing. Keep ego at bay. Do you want to talk about that component about doing the right thing?
Absolutely. I mean, I think, as you said, we're all wrestlers. We all have to wrestle with things in life. We have to wrestle with our fears. And And that's really what the book is about, is really my path towards wisdom of how I deal with fear. I'm lucky because I have to really figure out, I have to have a real repertoire of moves and tricks to deal with this on a daily basis. I can never defeat it. It's always going to be with me. It comes on my doorstep every day, but I have to find ways to actually realize that it's my friend, and it signals to me there's meaning out there. And if you follow that and you stick to your rules, you're going to find more meaning. You're going to have a more vivid, meaningful life. So I've loved that. I think one of the other stories that I don't know if I shared with you, but I recently, my daughter just got married, and I was preparing the toast for her wedding reception. And, you know, the most important toast of my life for my only daughter.
Yeah.
And the week before, I started preparing this, and I've given a lot of speeches, a lot of talks, and I've given a lot of toasts. This one, I just, every time I started practicing it, I started bawling. I couldn't get through it. And I kept asking myself, like, why is this? Oh my gosh, like, you're not going to be able to do this, you know? And I had to use another rule. You know, I had to magnify and illuminate what was happening. So, you know, that was another thing that I had to do. So I had to ask myself, why is this stirring so many emotions in me? And I really boiled down to the fact that, gosh, I was having all these regrets of being a busy surgeon, building my practice, building my reputation, building my skills, and my residency, and being at the hospital all this time and not having enough time to be with my little girl when she was a little girl. And I was just thinking of, gosh, I wish I had a little bit more of that time back. And I had to realize, you know, that, hey, probably every father has these thoughts, and, you know, especially doctors and neurosurgeons, and you're never going to get that time back, but you can be the best adult parent you can for your daughter. You can be there in a different way now that you have the wisdom of knowing that that you can move forward from this. And that helped me. And then the other sort of illumination that I had, which is a common, you know, rule, our rule is when you're struggling, get more exposure, get more magnification, get more illumination. And that was that I realized that this wasn't my toast to my daughter and her new husband. I was speaking on behalf of the family. I was speaking on behalf of the parents who couldn't be there on that day, the parents, the grandparents, the generations of our family that was passing on the love and the good wishes and the advice to them in this toast. And once I realized it's not about me, it's about you representing our whole family, both families, and everybody in this room, and that you're going to not think about regrets, but you're going to make a vow to be an even better parent as an adult, that's when I was able to deliver the toast that I wanted to deliver to Kaylee and AJ, my new fourth son who's joined our family.
That's a wonderful story about keeping the ego at bay. And it's even a better story about the most important thing in our lives, facing pain and emotional avoidance. I mean, we're all emotionally avoiding. We don't want to feel pain. We don't want to look at kind of the dark side of our feelings or what we're afraid of. And you had a lot to look at. That's a big thing as a parent to say, wow, I mean, I remember myself, you know, all those years, all those many years of practice and, you know, dealing with, did I have enough time with my children? Did I bring the best self? Did I do all the things she wanted me or he wanted me to do? And that takes a lot of courage, Mark. That takes a lot of courage for anyone in any walk of life, in any kind of situation, to be willing, as you say, to magnify and get more light on it. I mean, that's the surgical rule, but it's also the rule of life. Get some more light, get some more exposure to the truth on that topic. And what a wonderful story. Now, hard to believe we're already at the first break. Listeners, don't go away. We are having a spectacular conversation with a brain surgeon who is not a rocket scientist. I love that line so much, Mark. I just have to tell your wife again. We'll be right back.
Are you tired of not feeling heard and not feeling valued? Are you longing to receive the love and respect you want? There is a solution right now. Transform your relationships with easy-to-learn, proven communication skills. Dr. Georgiana Donadio, relationship communication expert and number one national best-selling, award-winning author of Changing Behavior, explores the unconscious patterns contributing to stress, lack of fulfillment, and our relationship interactions. By learning and applying the simple principles of behavioral engagement, which has been clinically tested in leading hospitals, to develop mindful pure presence, you can experience the happiness and fulfillment you deserve in your relationships. Begin changing your behavior today with Living Above the Drama radio show host, Dr. Georgiana Donadio. Call 888-354-4325. 888-354-HEAL. Call now.
Become credentialed for the emerging medical health and wellness field. Work within healthcare environments or start your own private practice and bill for your services with your own NPI number. Train for this exciting specialty in patient-focused health and wellness education with the National Institute of Whole Health, NIWH, the only nationally accredited training program for patient health education and advocacy. Open to credentialed health and education professionals, our training qualifies for health educator liability insurance, a national provider identification number, and our expert-prepared billing and coding manual.
For more information about the National Institute of Whole Health, visit www.niwh.org or call 1-888-354-HEAL, 888-354-4325.
If someone said you could transform your life and enhance your relationships by using a few simple communication techniques that can be applied in almost any setting, would you want to learn these skills? If the answer is yes, you've picked up the right book. This easy-to-read guide is loaded with simple skills that have been scientifically shown to have a huge impact on our relationships. By using the steps in this book, you will be able to enhance not only your life, but the lives of everyone around you. If you have the intention to practice and apply these skills, it will become a natural part of who you are. A true must-read for anyone who wants to transform their professional and personal lives. Changing Behavior. Immediately transform your relationships with easy-to-learn, proven communication skills by Georgiana Donadio.
You can purchase Changing Behavior by Dr. Georgiana Donadio by visiting Amazon.com, where it is available in both Kindle ebook and paperback.
Dr. Gass is on the advisory board of HealthCorp, a new program which was begun by Dr. Mehmet Oz.
65% are overweight and 35% are obese, and the sharpest rise in this country is between the age group of 4 to 8 years old.
Throughout his career, he has been inspired by patients who have experienced dramatic recoveries through lifestyle changes.
The National Institute of Whole Health is a perfect example of how people will learn to really take control of their lives in a healthy way. What they've done is they've collected basically the who's who of integrative health, and they've brought them together to give a series of lectures where they can then communicate with health professionals to basically deliver the message that we have to look at medicine from a different perspective.
For more information about the National Institute of Whole Health and their accredited professional continuing educational programs, go to www.wholepersonhealthcare.org or call 1-888-354-HEAL.
We are back with Dr. Mark McLaughlin, who is the author of an upcoming book which will be published by Scribner, Outthinking Fear, A Neurosurgeon's Secrets to Making Life's Tough Decisions. And before the break, we were talking about that wonderful story about writing the toast for your daughter's wedding. Now, I'm assuming you've got three boys and a girl, correct?
That's correct.
Now, did you want your teacher or invite your sons into wrestling? Was that part of your kind of development as a wrestling coach?
Well, two of my boys really took to it. My youngest boy wrestled for a few years, and then he's a big skateboarder. He chose skateboarding as his sport. He's a great athlete, but wrestling wasn't for him.
Right, right. So did that help you as an entree into the coaching venue?
Certainly it did, yeah, because, you know, it was you sort of have to straddle being a coach who's going to be sometimes a little firmer with the wrestlers and be a parent and put your, you know, arm around your child who's had a tough loss. So I think the biggest, it was interesting when I first started coaching with my boys, my biggest fear when I went to the meet was that I wanted them to have a good experience. I needed to make sure that they had a good experience. And, you know, wrestling's not like tennis. You know, when you lose six love in tennis, you know, you walk off the court and you're fine. When you get pinned in a wrestling match, you walk off with a sore shoulder and a achy neck and maybe a mat burn on your face. And it's a very different experience. So it was important for me to teach them that, you know, this is a chess match and this is a thinking person's game. And, what somebody does to you in a wrestling match, it's not personal. It's actually a chess match. And, you know, it's been funny because wrestling and neurosurgery don't typically go together. There aren't a lot of neurosurgeons who are wrestlers. Mm-hmm. I was fortunate to find one other that I know of, and he's actually a partner in my practice because I knew he had the same mindset as
wow.
I did.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
But it's not a common mix. But for me, it's my DNA. It's in everything that I do.
Well, I think it's such a wonderful metaphor, and I'm going to hope that you will continue writing more books and maybe a book about the actual metaphor, because it's such a wonderful topic, and it's germane to all of us because, as you said, we are all wrestling with life. Now, I want to get down to the nitty-gritty because I know the listeners are thinking it, and I'm sure as heck thinking it too. Stories on the table. You're talking about dealing with stress, dealing with making very important decisions very quickly. What are some of the experiences you've had with actual brain surgery that has maybe brought you to the brink of, you know, having to test these rules or these recommendations about dealing with the reality of life and the reality of your life as a brain surgeon in that moment?
Sure, sure. And that's really the theme of the book is, you know, I talk about in the beginning how, you know, we're in a society that says we want to avoid stress and avoid fear. It's bad for us. It shortens our lives. But as a physician, you know, I learned that stress is really important for bones to make them stronger. It's really important for muscles to grow them. And it's really important for your brain to grow. If we don't challenge our mind, we lose our intellect and we're at risk for developing dementia. We know that studies have shown that. So you need to keep applying stress in modicums, in certain doses, not continuously, but you need to apply that stress to really get results and be effective. One of the rules I talk about in neurosurgery is approach the enemy, surround the enemy, and gut the enemy and remove the enemy. And that was a very common surgical technique. When we come on a tumor, you surround it, you take away its blood supply, you gut the center of it, and then you collapse it on itself and you remove it. And the reason we do that is because if you start going right into the middle of the tumor, like drilling a hole, you'll get a lot of bleeding. So you have to sort of surround the enemy and take its feeding blood supply, just like you would if you surrounded an army in the field and you cut off its supply line. It's going to run out of ammunition and it's going to wither. Same exact rule in surgery. And I tell a story about one time coming down on a brain tumor that was densely adherent to a patient's brainstem. And the brainstem is really kind of like the I-95 of the brain. It's where all of the impulses are going through. Every signal, everything is packed into this one cable of wires. Yeah. And as I approached that tumor, for a split second, I was terrified. And I thought to myself, oh my gosh, what did you get yourself into? If one false movement and this person is paralyzed or worse, and you had that little voice in my head that we all have, you know, you're over your head here. You know, you should have gotten somebody else to do this. You're not good enough to do this. And, you know, surgeons don't talk about that stuff. You know, they're not going to generally share with you those kinds of fears, because people don't like to think that surgeons have those thoughts, but we're human beings just like everybody else.
Mm-hmm.
We've just trained our mind to do battle with that thought. So what I started to say myself was, get around it, shrink it, remove it. Get around it, shrink it, remove it. Get around it, shrink it, remove it. And I started following the border of this tumor, and I started getting around it, and I started just getting a little bit of a perimeter around it. And then I went further and further and further. And then I started getting ahead of it, and I started calming myself. And over the course of 5 to 10 to 15 minutes, I went from, you know, terror to, I got this. You can do this. Go ahead and do what you were trained to do. You know, and the first voice in your head is, what are you, crazy? You trained your whole life to do this. Of course you can do this. But there's always that voice of negativity that you need to control. And that was an experience that I had early on in my career that, you know, one would say, well, is that voice extinguished? No, it's significantly lower. It's significant. The volume on that is lower. The frequency and intensity of it is lower, but it's still there. I have to wrestle with that voice every day.
I can imagine. You must have some amazing challenges. And we want to talk a little bit later about, you know, looking at the bigger picture of outcomes, because I'm sure the outcomes and the data and the numbers play a part in the challenge of keeping that voice quiet, because it probably can pop up from time to time. One of the rules that you mentioned in the pre-interview was a millimeter is a mile, so approach everything with precision. And it sounds like that has got to be one of the biggest rules for a neurosurgeon.
Yes, a millimeter is a mile is something that we talk about in neurosurgery, because a little extra degree of an angle or a little more light into a corner can help you see the most important vessel that you have to preserve at the end of the surgery, at the end of maybe a long, long operation, several hours, sometimes 10 or 15 hours. The most important part of the operation is at the very end when you're trying to preserve that last blood vessel. And so I talk about how I need to remove an edge of bone and take off just the exact right amount. If you take off a little too less, you're not going to have the right angle, and you're going to have to push on a structure that might get bruised or injured. And if you take off too much, you're actually exposing a vein or an artery that doesn't need to be exposed, so you're increasing the possible risk of that surgery. So a millimeter is a mile is a mantra that we always have when we're doing exposure of important structures. That's always been a very important part of the dissection. And, you know, I give this talk up at West Point. I show them a picture of the trigeminal nerve, which is the nerve that supplies a person's face, and there's a blood vessel sitting right on it. And the operation, the critical portion of that operation is just lifting that blood vessel up off the nerve and putting something between it. So similar to what Dr. Ginetta was doing, I spoke about earlier in that interview. And the actual movement of that blood vessel, that's not that hard of a movement to do. But what I said to the football team when I was talking to them at West Point is, that's my line of scrimmage. I've got to do 1,000 things to land right on that vessel, on that nerve, exactly the way you look at it. Now, the snap of the ball, heck, something could happen. A blood vessel could leak, a tear. We could damage the nerve as we're moving the blood vessel. But I've put myself into a position of success. And that's what you do when you train for a football game or anything else. You train and you do every single little detail so that when you get to the snap of the ball, the chances are in your favor that you're going to succeed. And that's exactly what we do when we remove the edges of bone and make sure that every millimeter counts.
I'm sure you're well aware of the awe and fascination that most of us feel when we're thinking about someone going into the brain, the being, you know, the computer, the CPU of the body, and opening it and working on it. What do you find, what do you feel is the thing that a person who's in that brain, working on that brain, deciding to become a neurosurgeon, what is the most important thing? I would imagine that intimidation must be something, talking about overcoming stress. How is it? I mean, you were a fledgling at one point. How is it that one trains and overcomes the incredible intimidation of going into that CPU and possibly ruining the entire computer?
Well, you mentioned, I think that's the two answers to that. The first one is that it's a great privilege and honor to do what we do. And when somebody entrusts their life with you, their brain with you, it is a great privilege and honor for me. I had a patient said, thank you for taking care of me. I said, thank you for letting me take care of you. Thank you for the honor of taking care of you, for entrusting your life with me. And I think that's important. For a surgeon to always understand that it's a gift to be of service to somebody in a very profound way, and then more on a granular level, you get better in shades. You don't get better in gigantic steps in neurosurgery. You get better in shades, and you have to have very specific objectives that I teach my wrestlers, and that is, your goal can't be, well, I want to be a great neurosurgeon. Your goal can be that, but your objective must be, I'm going to go to the lab and practice my microdissection techniques on that cadaver skull that we have there. And I'm going to do that 5 times in the next month to get better at opening the cavernous sinus or whatever the anatomical structure is that you're trying to master. And so your goals need to be achievable, they need to be measurable, they need to have a due date, and those are the kinds of parameters that you have to set on yourself to get better, and you get better in shades, in gradations.
Mm-hmm. So when you're approaching this, even now, you're still a very young man, you're, I think, 52?
Oh, thank you very much. A young man?
Well, you are.
I love it.
Well,
you make me feel good.
Well, I'm old enough to be your mother, Mark, so to me, you're still a young man, okay? But the point of it is that, so you're still growing, you're still learning, you're still changing shades, as it was. And I think what we hear you saying is that life and skill and being an excellent anything, including brain surgeon, requires kind of the gentle, continuous unfolding and growing and developing of skills and of awareness and of all the things that it takes to do a good job. You mentioned there was another wonderful rule that you mentioned during the interview. It was always place a drain. Yeah, a safety valve, an alternative. Yeah. So can we talk about that?
Sure. So one of the things most people don't know about the brain and the intracranial compartment is that it's actually under pressure. So if you shake up a Coke can and you open up the top, what happens? It sprays right out at you, right? Because the pressure inside the can is higher than atmospheric pressure. Well, similarly, the contents is higher than atmospheric pressure. So if you the pressure, sometimes the brain can actually push out of that hole, and the brain tissue can get strangulated and be damaged. So when people have tumors in their head, the pressure can be quite high, and opening the skull can have a disastrous outcome, because you can open the skull and the brain can just swell right out at you. And it can become a very dangerous situation right away. Mm-hmm. So we have a rule in patients that have tumors, and that rule is always place a drain. And what that means is, through a separate incision on a different part of the head, we make a little tiny hole and we pass a small catheter, which is like a little flexible straw. We pass that into the center of the brain and we drain off a fluid. We let the fluid inside the head drain off to reduce the pressure. And that's our pop-off valve. That actually provides us with a little safety valve. So that when, then when we make the incision and we open up the, take the disc of skull off of the head and we approach the tumor, we're approaching that with a much more controlled environment. The brain doesn't swell out at us because we have a pop-off valve on the other side of the head. And that allows us for us to do a safer operation under controlled conditions, and it leads to better outcomes. We've learned that over time. So that's a cardinal rule in tumor surgery. Always leave a drain. But again, it's a metaphor for life. You know, what safety valves, what drains are we placing, are you placing in your life? You know, we've got to have pop-off valves. What are we doing to make sure that we're getting exercise? What are we doing that makes sure we're getting sleep? What are we doing to get rid of extraneous information? I talk about in the book about declaring an email bankruptcy, which is like for many years I've just struggled with trying to answer all my emails, and I'm meticulous. I want to answer all my emails, but in this day and age, that is impossible. You have to learn to function effectively, even sometimes in the face of failure. And so what one of my attorney friends suggested to me to do one day is declare email bankruptcy and just delete everything from anything from a month back. Just let it go, because if it's important, somebody's going to get you. They're going to call you. If it's critical, they're going to get in touch with you, or they're going to send you something impactful, like an actual hard letter, which we don't see anymore. So what it did was, I was like, wow, that really blows off a lot of steam for me. I don't feel the pressure of having to answer those 500 emails that I hadn't gotten to. And really, mm-hmm. 498 of them are not important anyway. So again, it's what are the safety valves that you're putting in place in your business, in your daily life, that are allowing you to have a more focused, controlled environment that you do have control over?
With less stress. And you summed it up saying always have an alternative. And it's kind of interesting, because when we think of safety valves, a lot of us would probably relate that to our personal relationships. And I think one of the safety valves, you know, remember time out with the kids, you know,
yes,
we give the kids
yes,
a time out. We give ourselves a time out. You know, if we're not behaving properly, if we're not working properly, if we're not being a good partner or being a good anything, we can give ourselves a drain or an alternative by taking time out, stepping away. I think one of the important things that I've learned in my many, many decades, I'm sorry to report so many decades of practice, is that stepping away very often. I mean, you can't do that because you're right there in the moment with the, you know, the surgery. But when we step away sometimes and we get some perspective, it's kind of like letting the steam valve open. We're able to let go of a certain amount of tension and fear and stress and anxiety, and we're able to look at things a little bit more clearly. So these are three things that we're going to have you recap. We're going to come back from our last break, and then we are going to be finishing up with our interview. It went by so fast. So when we come back, we're going to go over quickly the rules of neurosurgery. And then there are a couple more things that we want to talk about. And one of them is hope, Dr. Mark. You are in the position of providing hope to people, their child, their loved ones, their mother, father, husband, wife is having neurosurgery, brain surgery, and you can provide them, no matter what the outcome is, with some hope. So we're going to talk about that. Don't go away. We'll be right back.
Dr. Gass is on the advisory board of HealthCorp, a new program which was begun by Dr. Mehmet Oz.
65% are overweight and 35% are obese, and the sharpest rise in this country is between the age group of 4 to 8 years old.
Throughout his career, he has been inspired by patients who have experienced dramatic recoveries through lifestyle changes.
The National Institute of Whole Health is a perfect example of how people will learn to really take control of their lives in a healthy way.
What they've done is they've collected basically the who's who of integrative health, and they've brought them together to give a series of lectures where they can then communicate with health professionals to basically deliver the message that we have to look at medicine from a different perspective.
For more information about the National Institute of Whole Health and their accredited professional continuing educational programs, go to www.wholepersonhealthcare.org or call 1-888-354-HEAL.
If someone said you could transform your life and enhance your relationships by using a few simple communication techniques that can be applied in almost any setting, would you want to learn these skills? If the answer is yes, you've picked up the right book. This easy-to-read guide is loaded with simple skills that have been scientifically shown to have a huge impact on our relationships. By using the steps in this book, you will be able to enhance not only your life, but the lives of everyone around you. If you have the intention to practice and apply these skills, it will become a natural part of who you are. A true must-read for anyone who wants to transform their professional and personal lives. Changing Behavior. Immediately transform your relationships with easy-to-learn, proven communication skills by Georgiana Donadio.
You can purchase Changing Behavior by Dr. Georgiana Donadio by visiting Amazon.com, where it is available in both Kindle ebook and paperback.
Are you tired of not feeling heard and not feeling valued? Are you longing to receive the love and respect you want? There is a solution right now. Transform your relationships with easy-to-learn, proven communication skills. Dr. Georgiana Donadio, relationship communication expert and number one national best-selling, award-winning author of Changing Behavior, explores the unconscious patterns contributing to stress, lack of fulfillment, and our relationship interactions. By learning and applying the simple principles of behavioral engagement, which has been clinically tested in leading hospitals, to develop mindful pure presence, you can experience the happiness and fulfillment you deserve in your relationships. Begin changing your behavior today with Living Above the Drama radio show host, Dr. Georgiana Donadio. Call 888-354-4325. 888-354-HEAL. Call now.
Become credentialed for the emerging medical health and wellness field. Work within healthcare environments or start your own private practice and bill for your services with your own NPI number. Train for this exciting specialty in patient-focused health and wellness education with the National Institute of Whole Health, NIWH, the only nationally accredited training program for patient health education and advocacy. Open to credentialed health and education professionals, our training qualifies for health educator liability insurance, a national provider identification number, and our expert-prepared billing and coding manual.
For more information about the National Institute of Whole Health, visit www.niwh.org or call 1-888-354-HEAL, 888-354-4325.
And we are back with Dr. Mark McLaughlin, who is a brain surgeon and neurosurgeon. You are at, are you at Princeton? Where is it that you're practicing?
My practice is Princeton Brain and Spine Care. It's located in Princeton, New Jersey, and we cover really the central New Jersey area and Bucks County. I have six fantastic doctors in my practice, and we've been providing the whole region with neurosurgery care for 15 years.
That's fantastic. So if any of you, I'll tell you something, Dr. Mark, if I ever get that diagnosis or someone near and dear to me does, I'm going to be looking you up. I'm going to be going down to Princeton to find you. You have such a wonderful attitude. You have such a egoless approach. You have a I think this is the discipline of wrestling and looking at life from a very pragmatic and yet courageous viewpoint. And I think I'm sure your patients know how very lucky they are. Not all of us are fortunate enough to have doctors who have discipline and who have a perspective of compassionate care as well as competency. So I wouldn't be surprised if you heard from somebody from the show. They said, I heard about this neurosurgeon. You've got to look him up.
Well,
he's down
you.
In Princeton. He's down in Princeton. Let's go over these rules real quick, because then as we're closing, I would love for you to talk about hope, about the hope that you can give with good outcomes and with outcomes that are not exactly what everybody had hoped for. So let's go over the rules quickly. Never too late. You want to talk about that again real quick and then go over the millimeter and the drain if you just want to just recap.
It's never too late to do the right thing, no matter where you are in a decision-making process. If you identify a better pathway or a better solution, have the courage to admit that you've gone down the wrong pathway and make it the right pathway. Always leave a drain.
Yeah.
Have alternatives. Think out ways to allow your focus to be more directed towards the matter at hand. And lastly, measure millimeters and miles. Little things make a huge difference. I always tell my wrestlers and my students that nothing you learn, nothing you're exposed to in your life is superfluous. Someday, there is going to be a meaning for what you learned. It will come out in the strangest of places, but it will, if you're looking for it, it will help you.
Isn't it incredible the things that we heard when we were young and the things that we tell our own children? You know, that everything corrects itself, that no one gets away with anything, that everything comes into the light, that the knowledge you learn now, it may come back, you know, 30 years from now. All of these pieces of wisdom that we are all taught, and yet we don't believe it until we see it, do we?
You're right. You got to get older. So I tell my kids, I'm from the future. Listen to what I have to say, because I'm from the future, and what I'm telling you will happen to you.
That is absolutely fantastic. I'm from the future. That's a great line. Parents, are you listening? I'm from the future. Talking about the future, let's talk about, I mean, people come in and they're consulting with you, and there's no end to the possibilities of what you're seeing and listening to. There's that junction where they want hope and they want clarity and they want some, you know, kind of reassurance. Then there is before surgery, and then there's after surgery. Can you talk about, first of all, let's give the people listening hope, because most of us, at some point, we all know somebody who has or has had, and maybe we know a number of people who have had brain tumors or brain traumas. Can you talk to us about the numbers and the hope that comes with modern medicine and brain surgery?
Well, I would add to modern medicine the power of prayer. I mean, every surgery that I do, I have my five P's before I start a case. I take a pause. I, in my mind, think about who this patient is and what the disease, how it's affected them in the way that it's affected them. I go over my plan of exactly what I'm going to do. I have a positive thought about me being the person at this moment on earth to do this surgery. And lastly, I say a prayer. And that prayer, you know, some people say prayer doesn't change the outcome of things, but prayer always changes me. And so I really have a faith that what we're doing in this world matters, and there are reasons for it that we may not be privy to. And so no matter what the diagnosis is, you know, if somebody asks me, you know, I say there's always a chance, there's always hope, and we have to, you know, pray. And hope that, you know, this is going to work out. And, you know, you never want to leave a patient without hope, never.
Exactly. So you give their families hope, you give them hope, and you bring in prayer. There are many studies that are now showing that prayer and just the touching of the human hand to a person's body changes vitals. There are so many different studies that are coming out with all these wonderful insights about the intention, the whole idea of intention. What do you do after surgery when it hasn't gone quite the way everyone would have liked it to go? How do you handle that as a doctor, number one? And number two, what do you say to the families and to the patients when one of my very dearest colleagues, her husband went in for brain surgery, and unfortunately, he is severely disabled. And he walked in, you know, it was kind of an elective correction for arterial thing, and he is severely disabled. So the outcome was not what was expected. How do you handle that?
It's always tough. It's a shock. And, you know, no matter how many times that happens to you, no matter how experienced you get, it hurts. It hurts you. And all I do is try to describe the events of what happened to the family as well as I can in a way that they can understand, and let them know that we're doing everything that we can. And that, you know, again, you hope and you pray and you thank God for every day you have on earth. And we'll continue as long as we have a person that I know is still in that brain, that their soul hasn't left their body. We're going to fight for recovery and meaningful recovery. If at some point it doesn't seem like there's going to be a meaningful recovery, I'm very, frank with families about that. And oftentimes they ask me what I would do with my loved one. And I lost my dad last year, and these are hard things to struggle through, but you have to think selflessly. You can't think about what's best for yourself. You have to think what's best for the person or the patient or the loved one that you're making these decisions on. And if you do that and approach them with thoughtfulness and love, you're going to come up and make the right decision.
Absolutely. Dr. Mark McLaughlin, you are, without a doubt, and I've met a lot of doctors in my day, you are a refreshing, powerfully insightful, I'm sure extremely gifted and talented physician. And I would like you to share your contact information. We know the name of your book, which is coming out soon, is Outthinking Fear, A Neurosurgeon's Secrets to Making Life's Tough Decisions. Would you share your contact information? I will bet that someone out there from this radio interview is going to benefit with your skill and be able to contact you. So would you tell them how to get a hold of you?
It would be my pleasure. And thank you so much for the opportunity to be on the show. My website is markmclaughlinmd.com. My Twitter handle is mmclaughlinmd. And my professional Facebook page is markmclaughlinmd. I'd welcome any comments, thoughts, reactions, impressions that people have from my stories. I love to hear how they resonate with people and how it helped them in some way. It's funny, you know. I people say, how do you have time and energy to do this? But I get energy from this. I get energy from sharing the insights and wisdom that I've learned and passing it on, and especially to younger people. So I'd love to hear from any of the listeners and get your reactions and thoughts.
I want to make sure we've got
stories.
I want to make sure we've got your name spelled. Your name is a little tricky. Maybe you could boil it down to Dr. Mark, okay? Because spelling your name is a challenge, and I want to make sure people know so that if they are trying to reach you, they can. McLaughlin is MC, and it's just like laugh, L-A-U-G-H-L-I-N. So think of laugh-in, McLaughlin, and it's MC, L-A-U-G-H-L-I-N. My former husband had a very Irish name, and it was nobody ever got the spelling of it right. So when it came to any kind of emails or things, he always shortened it. But Dr. Mark, a pleasure. You're a gift to all of us. Thank you for service, for your caring, for your compassion. And listeners, join me again next week for another inspiring program of Living Above the Drama.